We're now in the very heart of the retreat, the depth of the retreat. And many of you have experienced perhaps some difficulty with the emotional or feeling world. Some of you have not had any difficulty. That is also fine. There is great encouragement from me to really be dedicated with the practice, especially at this time. In the past, when I've sat and done retreats myself, and I've done many, the simplest and easiest way, I think, is just utter and total surrender to every bell. So when the bell rings and it's time for a sit, you sit. When it rings and it's time for walking, just walk, and so on. That way, all of the inner turmoil that says, oh, shall I go to the sit? No. Oh, I'm too tired. Maybe I shouldn't. And so on. All of that is simply put aside. And what comes in its place is a shifting, an opening up, a release from this world of thought, where even a decision about whether I should come to the meditation hall in the morning can become a drama. I know there are one or two people that I've said need rest. So those people, if you certainly need to rest, please do. For the rest of us, we're in the depth of the retreat right now. So please, diligent practice. And sometimes that requires some effort to push oneself just through any resistance. And we do it not by being forceful, but rather by being tender and loving. In Australia, in the area where I live, there's an indigenous group, and in their language, the word to love means to make soft. So sometimes, when we experience resistance in our meditation practice, we just need to make soft our body, our mind, our heart. And then there's a very natural joy and ease that starts to come into our practice. And then our practice itself becomes not a chore or a burden, but something that is an expression of love itself. So whatever arises in the heart and mind, just softening, making soft, and that very action is an action and expression of love. And the Dharma teachings at your depth, of course, are teachings of the liberation of love. So today we come to the third foundation of mindfulness. Mindfulness of mind states, or mindfulness of mental formations. A mental formation is a thought or construct or an idea that is formed, put together. So when we endeavor to be mindful of mental formation, sometimes people get in a tangle about what on earth that is. It's simply to be aware of our thoughts, our ideas, our opinions, our views, our judgments. But it's slightly more than that. It's also to be aware of all the matters of the heart. So citta is the Pali word for heart-mind. And so we are bringing our mindfulness to the totality of all that we experience with the heart and mind. That's our practice. And in the Anapanasati Sutta, there are four couplets, four directions for how we might contemplate this, for how we might experience the heart and mind. The first is simply, I shall breathe in, experiencing the heart and mind. I shall breathe out, experiencing the heart and mind. So all we need to do is to be with our experience today, whatever it is. Now the mind, as you know, tends to get caught up in all sorts of dualities. So sometimes the mind will be caught in wanting or having. We'll be having a greedy day. We'll want more food at breakfast. We'll want more blissful meditations, sittings. We'll want more attention from the teachers or from somebody else. We'll experience that, perhaps a lack, a felt lack inside ourselves. And then we start to chase after with our mind, with our thoughts, with our views, with our ideas, what it is that we want. So the first duality of mind is mind that's caught up in the pursuit of things, the mind that runs after things. So we're invited to notice whether there's any greed present today, or to notice whether there's any greed absent. Greed can be absent. So when we just check in with how we are today, what's going on in the heart and mind, we go, oh, is there greed present? Is there greed absent? When we do go in pursuit of things, there's a kind of pulling towards that happens. We run after something and we want to make it ours. Of course, in life that can be a person, often an object, a thing, a possession. It can be a particular status, something we run after that we want for ourselves. So this is the movement of mind that sometimes occurs. So that first duality is there greed present? Is there greed absent today? So our practice is just checking it out, seeing. Sometimes, of course, the mind's also caught up in negativities. So is there negativity present today? Is there negativity absent? Sometimes we are rather critical. Critical of ourselves, critical of others. We find fault with the person sitting next to us or behind us because they breathe too loudly or they move. Do we not all breathe and move? We find fault with something that is said. We think it should have been said or done otherwise. We look inwardly and we find usually endless faults with ourselves. We never measure up. How we want to be and how we are is quite different. And this striving to be other than how we are is stress itself. So we check out. Are we caught up in negativity? Are we pushing something away? Are we experiencing lots of aversion and disliking? The third of the dualities, and there are many, we'll just do a few, is confusion. Is the mind today in confusion? when we're confused, the thoughts tend to loop. They're rather circular. We go round and round and round and round. And we have the view that if we keep thinking about it, we'll sort it out. Sorry, we won't. The way through is so often quite different from the world of thought. So we need to find another way of being with ourselves in order to make the breakthrough to freedom. Mind that's confused or deluded is sometimes hard to see because we're confused and deluded. We actually don't know that we're confused. And that's where Sangha comes in, that's where good friends come in. Someone can point out what we can't see ourselves. We can all see it in other people, of course. We just don't see ourselves very clearly often. The next of the dualities is mind that's contracted or suppressed or not. So sometimes the heart and mind are rather contracted. And if that happens again, it's that process of feeling the sensations in the body inwardly, and softening and working with that to free up the heart and mind. Mind can be distracted or not. Mind can be focused in samadhi or not. Sometimes our mind state's rather elevated, up, or high. Sometimes it's dull, low, flat. So we just check it out. We go, oh, what's the condition of our heart and mind today? Just see. The tendency, of course, is to give ourselves a hard time. Oh, I'm really distracted today. And then we go into all the other views that are extended out from that. We think we're distracted, then we think, oh well, meditation is a waste of time, and what am I doing here, and I shouldn't have come in the first place, and I want to go home. Whatever. So these are some of the mind roads that we can go down. And finally, the final duality of mind is sometimes the mind feels rather free and sometimes the mind is rather bound. So mind is free or mind is bound is another duality. So first of all, just check, if you would, the condition today, your own heart and mind. What's revealed? What do you see? So the second of our couplets is, I shall breathe in, gladdening the heart and mind. I shall breathe out, gladdening the heart and mind. We need a Hebrew translation of gladdening.
Lissamech. Lissamech. Lassot samech. Lissamech.
Thank you.
And mind.
Tada. Leche. Mind it over.
So I breathe in, gladdening the heart and mind, or gladdening the heart mind. I put heart and mind because I'm covering everybody. Sometimes people like mind, sometimes they like heart, sometimes they like heart mind. Doesn't matter. Whatever works for you. So, I shall breathe in, gladdening the heart and mind. I shall breathe out, gladdening the heart and mind. That's option two. The third is, I shall breathe in, concentrating or focusing the heart and mind. I shall breathe out, focusing or concentrating the heart and mind. And the fourth is my all-time favourite, which is, I know you're not meant to have favourites, but I do. I shall breathe in, liberating the heart and mind. I shall breathe out, liberating the heart and mind. So these 16 couplets that we're working through are actually in a particular order. And in this retreat, we're just giving you an overview. And each couplet actually has with it some insights that can be seen and known when you practice it. And so, if you like, it is a step-by-step process. But since we have such few days, we don't have a six-month retreat. We only have 7 days. We're going through it fairly quickly so that you get a taste of some of the things that are on offer. You get a chance to practice some of them, and then you can take up those things that really work for you. You might perhaps, after the retreat, take up one of these that really speaks to you, one that you can see has some benefit, and work with it for some weeks or even months until you tease out all of the insights that can be understood and gained from the practice. And I have to say, in the one-to-ones, many of you have come saying, oh, I began to do the instruction. And then you've told me what's happened. You said, oh, I did this. And one person said, at first I could not experience any joy yesterday. So she went on to experience. And she said, oh, but I could experience pleasure. And then she went through and she worked on the rest. And then guess what happened? Rather naturally, the joy came. So you see, sometimes we can't work with one, but we can begin somewhere else, and then rather naturally the whole process opens out and unfolds. So I want to begin, as I have been, with a 3-minute practice. And the first is, I shall breathe in, experiencing the heart and mind. I shall breathe out, experiencing the heart and mind. And you already know by now, I'm going to ask you what's happened. So what did you discover about the heart and mind today? Yes.
When I say this sentence, it's already out. You're breathing.
Okay. You don't literally have to say the sentence in your mind. It's just you sit with the intention to experience the heart and mind. So you don't have to say over and over again the sentence, but rather you sit. And the intention is, I breathe in experiencing the heart and mind, I breathe out experiencing the heart and mind, and then you just do it. Anybody else? Yes?
I think it's like assisting me to center.
Yes.
It gives me like a ground.
Yes.
My mind can't, because they're together.
Okay. Yes. So, you are sitting, there's a sense of centeredness, and then there's the coming together of what? Heart and mind, like this. She went. Very good. Yes. So just in a few moments of being with the heart and mind, we can experience just the coming together of the two. The non-separation, the non-division. Anyone else? Yes.
I felt emptiness.
Okay. Emptiness in what way? In what
in
sense?
In the way that there is the self.
Yes.
The thinking.
Yes.
There was no thinking.
Ah.
There was something clear.
Okay.
I call it emptiness, but it's maybe something.
There was something, did you say clear? Emptiness is not actually the absence of thought. Emptiness doesn't mean absence. Emptiness means emptiness of intrinsic existence. It's the emptiness of the belief in the separate sense of self. We had some long inquiry last night about this, and often it's the language that is problematic, because we say I feel pain, or I feel a particular sensation, or I see, when what we're doing through the language is we're adding to the I. And there is simply just seeing. To come back to the philosophy, the philosopher Wittgenstein said, the separate sense of self is a shadow of grammar. So the separate sense of self is kept in place, I can't remember the exact statement, or formed, and it's a shadow of our grammar. So when we stop experiencing from this standpoint of I, which we construct and put together, there's a particular release that takes place. Because then we just say, oh, there is thought, or there is the absence of thought. Okay, so for you, you saw the absence of thought. And what did that reveal to you? When thought is absent, it's a precious and beautiful experience. And, oh, what blessed relief when thought is sometimes absent, even for a second. So when thought is absent, say again what it showed you.
Clarity.
Clarity. What else? That's beautiful, yes. What else?
Peace.
Yes, peace.
Silence.
Silence. So when thought is absent, when the mind is just quiet, there's a profound silence. When the mind is quiet, there's the heart of peace. When the mind and the world of thought subsides, we see and know that our sense of our constructed self, the me, is actually empty. This is emptiness, as you said. But just to make my point again, emptiness doesn't mean the emptiness that we can experience when we feel a bit desolate or barren or depressed. Not that kind of emptiness. We're talking about emptiness of intrinsic existence or a belief in a separate sense of self. We are not trying to delete this or get rid of the self, but rather to negate the self, but to let go of our sense of our own belief in being a separate person in this difficult world. Let's go on. Let's do the next one, which is, I shall breathe in, gladdening the heart and mind. I shall breathe out, gladdening the heart and mind. So if you would, please. And it's going to be very short, but let's see with each breath whether there can be a sensation or an experience of gladness. Beautiful. Beautiful. So there's the gladness felt, sensations in the pleasant sensations in the hands, the quickening of the heart, and then the absence of the pain. Beautiful. Beautiful. Anyone else? Yes?
Find a lot of versions of this instruction.
Yes. Yes.
It reminds me of yesterday's instruction with the drawing. I feel like I need to imposing myself something not present.
Yes. And why do you think the Buddha would have given that instruction?
He's a wise man.
Oh! So you think he might have been wise? And you hear the instruction and you go, oh, I'm not going to do that.
No, I'm not doing that.
Ah.
Trying to do that, seeing the thought goes to let them nothing.
Yes.
So
the thought goes, I don't want to be glad. I'm not glad. I'm not glad. Okay, so this is, we cling to our view, don't we? Because we know that feelings are impermanent. They change in a second. So this view that we have, I'm not glad today, it's just that. It's clinging to a view that we give continuity through time to, don't we? We say, I'm not glad. I'm not glad now, and I'm not glad in the next 5 minutes, because I don't want to do this. So we have to be really sharp in the way that we see our own trickiness of mind, because the sense of I lands on the view I'm not happy, and then we also give that the continuity through time. I'm not happy now, and I'm not going to be happy because I don't want to. Yet we know that in a second our entire feeling world can change, can't it? It can just change from one thing to the other. And this training of the mind to gladness has the purpose of releasing us from our pain and suffering. And so, yes, initially we might have some resistance or aversion. It's true. There was a woman on a retreat, and she's come to many retreats. I love her dearly. And she just heard these instructions and she went into the most enormous aversion. She said, Radha, I was sitting there and I just couldn't stand it. I could not bear what you were saying. I just thought it was ridiculous. I thought it was rubbish. And then she said, I went into feeling, oh, it's always like this. I come to retreat. I know I should never have come in the first place. What did I do it for? I keep doing the same thing over and over, and she just went into total negativity. And she said, I can't feel anything that's pleasant. I can't feel joy. I can't feel gladness. I know I can't. I shouldn't have come. She got up at the end of the sitting, and she walked over to the window. And a breeze came onto her face. And she felt the sensations of the breeze touching her face. And for a second she thought, oh. Oh. And she felt gladness. She felt glad. And then she thought, oh, maybe I can feel it. Maybe I can. And then she said, she stood there, and every time the breeze touched her face, she let that whole sensation run through more and more and more of her body, until she felt the gladness, until she felt extraordinary joy through her entire body. And then she came to me and told me what happened. And I said, and can you feel it now? Can you feel that freedom now? That, because our gladness and our joy is very close to release and freedom. That's why the instruction is there. And she said, yes, actually, I can. I can feel right now a sense of peace. And so this is why we practice in this way. To step through our conditioned views of I'm unable to feel joy, I'm unable to feel glad. So this is the practice. And you can take it up or leave it as you wish, but I really invite you to try it. Try it anyway. See what happens for yourself. We have one more that I'd like to do because it is my favorite. We'll just do the fourth. We'll skip the third today because we're running out of time. And if you would, please indulge me with, again, just really sitting, being very mindful of every single breath, very attentive. And the invitation is to sit with extraordinary freedom of the heart and mind. And all I'm asking you to do is to breathe in, liberating the heart and mind, and to breathe out, liberating the heart and mind. Light, white, then golden, blue sky. So the expansiveness, the vast, the immeasurable mind. So sometimes, of course, we can just sit and we get the sense of that which is immeasurable, boundless, vast. And this is exquisite. Boundless, heart and mind, the limitless nature of this life.
It's heart and mind sounds very, very abstract to me.
Yes.
However, I relate to the what you just the what is it, the structure that you said just before, gladdening.
Yes.
And I think it should come together somehow. Then I would my reaction then when you said to gladden, the word despite or the word nonetheless in Hebrew it's adaraba, meaning that even though I may feel a sensation of a lump in my throat or a difficulty of in a very difficult situation, there is this gladdening, and there is a duality. The duality is there, the better sensation and the worse sensation, and they live together. And so I have to witness, I mean, in order to be real, I have to witness the not good situation, but there is the gladdening, because that's life.
Beautiful. Well said. So the way we work with emotions in the Dharma world is we see where it sits in the body. So if there's the lump in the throat, as you described, the way that we can work with it is we bring very loving attention to it from inside the body, as if we would cradle this as something absolutely precious. And then we track the shifting, changing sensations. And then a way of dealing with it is to bring some inquiry and ask, is there a thought or a belief that's associated with this sensation? And then we just wait. We don't think about it, we wait. And then we see what comes through the body and mind. So this is another way of working with our pain. And we're not just denying our pain and going around saying, oh, we meditators, we're all very happy, thank you very much. It's not that. Yes, there's wisdom in doing some of these practices. The goal is release from suffering. And so we need to find whatever works for us. That's why there's so many different instructions, so that each of us can find something that works for us, that liberates the heart and mind. So whatever works, whatever wakes you up, please do it. That's my view. 1 minute before we finish. One more experience of what happens when we set the intention of liberating the heart and mind. Yes?
First instructions, I felt like very, very tired.
Loudly?
Very tired.
Yeah.
Very tired. And I could feel the resistance to it. And the fear.
Yes.
What's happening. And then when you when you talked about the gladness.
Yes.
I could feel like it's shifting, and the resistance is
yes.
getting less.
Yes.
And I experienced the possibility of being very tired.
Yes.
Not feeling well.
Yes.
But not in a bad way. Like
yes.
In a free kind of way. And that led me to the third instructions of that's the kind of liberation what I'm feeling.
Yes. So you can even feel quite free with tiredness. Beautiful. The instructions on citta and working with the mind are not easy to understand. They are, however, I think, the core and heart of our practice. Once we understand a way of freeing the heart and mind, our whole practice, our whole life opens out. Consciousness frees up from the mundane and the ordinary. And we get to see that which is beyond our everyday struggles. We get to see that which is vast, free, unconstructed, that which we don't put together with the mind, that which is not put together with thought. Yes?
Can I ask, can you have, if a person listens to sounds instead of the breath, can they have the same experience?
Yes, of course. So you can take the attention to sound. Of course, what happens is when we do that, we also experience the vastness of silence itself. The silence that contains and supports all sound. And so that's another way of coming to a sense of the vast, the unformed, and the unconstructed. Yes?
What about mental images?
Mental images? I don't teach myself any visualization practice, but I know that there are many teachers who do. It's partly because I have very few mental images that come to mind in my practice ever. And so it's not an area of expertise. In the Dharma world, mental images are often just seen as a reflex of the mind. And so we don't give, usually, a lot of attention to it. There are some, not in the insight tradition, but there are some other traditions of the Buddha Dharma where there's a lot of attention given to visualization and mental images. And some teachers in guided meditations, you will see later, will use imagery